Hi, good evening. This is Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours. Tonight, I scheduled this special episode of Office Hours to kind of highlight 9/11 and EMS during 9/11. You know, there's so many EMS providers that took part on the day of, during the attack, after the attack, you know, rescue efforts, recovery efforts. And so many of EMS providers just don't get to tell their story. And while everybody has a story, and some people might not want to share it, some people feel that reliving this every year just kind of opens up those wounds again. But other people feel that there are stories out there, especially from EMS, and that need to be told, you know, out to the general public. And you, if you go watch a lot of the media now, you see a lot of stories out there, a lot of firefighter stories, a lot of police stories, a lot of even individual people stories who were in the tower that escaped and found ways to, you know, get out and help each other during that time. And while all those stories are very moving, they all have a part of the history of 9/11. You don't see too many of these stories when it comes to EMS. And I'm hoping that those people that will come on the show today live, maybe show up in the chat room, listening in, calling in, will maybe give their story. Now, I know that this can be the type of forum that might be a little intimidating, but please do not be intimidated. This is just a few EMS providers, and we're talking amongst each other as if we're talking in front of the ambulance, as if we're talking in the crew room, to try to maybe give our stories to each other, and so that maybe a bigger audience can hear these stories as well. Hopefully we're going to have some people calling in soon. I didn't have that much time to promote this episode, but I did try to get it out to as much as I could to the masses. I did get some emails from people telling me they would love to show up but can't. I'm going to mention some of their information during the show, and also going to try to mention some events that are coming up as well, you know, for the show. So if you are listening in live right now, you want to give us a call and maybe just give a few moments of what your thoughts are. Even you don't have to give a whole story, just call up, give you a quick thoughts on what you think and what your feelings are. You can call toll free. It's 877-217-3924. That's 877-217-3924. It's toll free. Give us a call and let us know your thoughts, your feelings. Give your story, maybe a quick snippet, maybe a quick takeaway that you feel, you know, from 9/11, and we'd be loved to go ahead and hear that from you. I believe I have Josh. Are you here with me tonight, Josh?
Sure am, Jim.
Josh, I know. I kind of gave you. I didn't give you too much of a heads up on tonight's show. I apologize, but. I was actually – this kind of motivated me today, tonight, to do this show, and this might not be the best time because I know there's a lot of things going on today and tomorrow, and a lot of people are busy, and maybe they don't have enough time to take part in a you know, show like this. I mean, this is kind of small scale compared to a lot of other things that are going on, but I wanted to at least give the opportunity, at least, you know, put it out there and maybe get some people that might call in or even just show up in the chat room and maybe plug along a little bit. So, Josh, any thoughts you want to kind of share before we get into some of the other things that I want to try to plug along here?
You know, it's not an easy subject, Jim, and it's one that's you know, what do you talk? How do you talk about such a terrible happening that had such deep ramifications for the rest of almost everybody I know's life?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
it certainly changed the direction of mine.
I'm going to give a disclaimer that if this show does, you know, go on tonight, I mean, I'm not going to sit here begging people to call in because I know, again, like I mentioned, it can be an uncomfortable subject for people. But if it does go on, I'm just going to give a disclaimer that if you hear my voice cracking, you know, I apologize. This is an emotional thing for me as well. You know, from being there, from people that I know that were there, and people that lost their lives that I knew that were there as well. So, you know, I just want to kind of just put that out there and say this isn't an easy subject for me either, and it is an uncomfortable situation kind of put myself in, you know, from the show here. But again, I'm hoping that we're going to get some calls tonight, Josh, and maybe someone will call in and maybe share their story and maybe give their thoughts on what they experienced, you know, on 9/11 10 years ago. Josh, one thing I do want to mention, you know, one thing that I did see a lot, especially on Facebook, was the first responders not being invited to this the 10th anniversary at 9/11,
right,
at Ground Zero, you know, for the, I guess the...
I didn't believe it. When it first happened, I didn't, I thought it was just one of those internet rumors.
I know, I
honestly couldn't believe it.
I found an article on it online where they kind of went into it, and it was actually confirmed, you know, by Bloomberg's office, according to this article, the CNN article that I found online. And, I mean, their excuse is that there's not enough room, you know, to have the first responders there, you know.
I'm sorry that we take up so much space.
Well, to me, I mean, you know what? If there's not enough room to invite, you know, the police officers, firefighters, EMS, you know, Port Authority officers and all that to this event, I mean, get a bigger venue. Find someplace bigger to hold it. You know, it's almost like they're trying to push the first responder to the side, and there's been some accusations that it's kind of being done to lessen the public, I guess, perception or the you know, the way that responders can actually show that they're having, you know, long-term health issues from 9/11, and by kind of pushing these first responders to kind of to the back, that's not highlighted, that's not, you know, in the front of people's minds now, you know. And that's been kind of some of the accusations that have been going on with that. And it's unfortunate if that's the case. I mean, I like to believe that that's not the case, but you know,
I'm thinking that's a little bit nefarious. I don't think that they're looking to bury the idea of that many of us are injured out there or, you know, and, you know, holy crap. You know, when you say injured, I'm not talking about, like, not able to function. I mean, there are people out there that are the walking wounded is now a term that's overused, but there are people out there that are dealing with some of the health issues and memories, and they're still doing their jobs. They're still going out there every day. They're still, you know, dealing with people and dealing with the strangeness of this time period, because this is like in some respects, for a lot of us, we sort of pride ourselves on going on in the background without any noise, without any fanfare and attention. And then, you know, I mean, come on, you were working the bus this last week. How many patients did you have? How many times were you contacted by somebody who said, oh, you know, where were you that day? Or what were, you know, how did it change your life? Or what, you know, and you just, it's, you know, why now? Why do you ask me right now? Just because it's in the news? I mean, what happened to the rest of the year?
Well, it's true. I mean, I think a lot of providers and you know, have this mentality where we don't want to be in the limelight, you know. And there's been some accusations of people that complain about not being invited to the 10th anniversary. Well, we shouldn't really care if we are invited or not. You know, we should be, you know, have that selfless service of not being, you know, not worrying about being invited. I mean, no one's asking to be invited and to be and to be on stage. It's just that, you know, if you want to be invited and be part of this healing process, be part of this, you know, this whole anniversary, you know. And I hate the word anniversary, to be honest with you. It's the one word I hate every year of saying, oh, the anniversary of 9/11. It's like, you know, to me, anniversary is more of a celebration type thing, you know. And so
there's nothing to celebrate here. There's just remembrance. There is nothing to celebrate about this day. And, you know, and it's just like, and I don't know if what you're doing tomorrow. I have worked every single 9/11 since 9/11, and I just had to continue to do it, and that gives my sense of, you know, the soul. That gives me a little bit of whatever level of closure or whatever level of completeness that I can feel on that day, because it's a very hollow, you know, it's a hollow feeling day. You feel very empty. And,
I agree. I mean, I haven't worked every 9/11. I have worked, you know, a few after the fact. And I'm lucky enough this year, I'm not working this year. It's funny, my wife wants me to find myself a way to occupy myself so I'm not stuck in front of the TV.
That's what I'm doing it.
You know, being forced to
watch. I can't be in the house, man.
You really can't escape it, unfortunately. It's really hard to escape it unless you put on a movie or something like that. And it does make it, you know, hard to watch a lot of the stuff that's on. And now that they have new audios out there from the planes and the towers and stuff like that they're releasing, and it's just going to be a whole nother, you know, angle now on it, you know, as well. So, you know, it's
you know what gets me more than just, you know, the stuff on the TV? It's when you're out during the day and remember, I mean, how can any of us forget that crisp, crisp, ultra bright blue day that it was? I mean, you know, when I walk out and it's a September morning and it's that ultra bright blue crisp day, especially a couple of years ago, it was a 9/11 and it was exactly like that day. I mean, and then you're just getting bombarded on the radio and TV and everywhere that you turn with, you know, this is the anniversary, this is the 8-year anniversary, 9-year, 7-year, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it just comes back to you, you know, that the whole thing, you know, that whole morning. And because I think in some ways, because that morning was so freaking normal, that just was a real nice morning. And just to have that, you know, to have your spirits up and everything else, and then to have them just like torn apart.
Yeah.
It's a day that's
it's, you know,
hard to run. You got to do what you have to do.
Yeah, I want to remind people, anybody listening, I see a few people over in the chat room. Anybody wants to call in, share your thoughts, a comment about what we're talking about, no matter what it is, anything, even if you weren't there, if you know somebody who was, if you were the type of person who was affected by it just by watching on television, you know, this is a show for you, the EMS provider. And I'm trying to give, you know, the EMS professionals out there some type of a voice through this show. You never know who's going to listen to it. It might be nobody. It might be 1,000 people. It could be even more than that. So please feel free to call in. It's toll free. It's 877-217-3924. Feel free to give us a call. You know, Josh, on September 11th, I actually wasn't working that day. I was at the gym. I was actually going to the gym, meeting my friend over there who was also my supervisor at the hospital that I worked at. And on the way there, I'm listening to the radio, and I hear the first plane hit, you know, on the radio. And a lot of the reports initially, of course, was that it was a small airplane
that hit
the tower, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, wow, you know, so that's really messed up. And I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be a big cluster. It's going to be a big mess. You know, even a small plane, you know, hitting the towers could be a nightmare. And then I go into the gym, and I'm at the gym, and now the second plane hits. And at that point, it's like me and And my supervisor looked at each other and were like, you know what, we've got to get into work. We cannot just blow this off and take the day off here. And then we wound up going in, and I'll tell you, it was surreal to me that the highways were empty to everyone but emergency professionals, that they were waving through. You showed them your shield, they waved you through to get to where you want to go. And I remember going over the Verrazano Bridge into Brooklyn and looking over and seeing the towers, totally, on fire and smoke and everything. And I actually went into to 9/11 on a MERV, a big emergency response vehicle. The hospital put a couple of paramedics, EMTs, on this MERV with a bunch of equipment and supplies. And we got on to dispatch, and they told us where to go. And I actually wound up initially on the Brooklyn side of the Brooklyn Bridge, and pretty much
What
just
hospital were you with?
at Victory Memorial Hospital in Brooklyn, and it's in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And we already had units that were working that day already responded into Manhattan. We already had people down at Ground Zero that we didn't know where the hell they were at that point. They were units that were sent, because we were you're right by the BQE, right by the Battery Tunnel, where the hospital is. And we had a medic unit there. We had the two BLS units were already down there, and we were getting sent, and they had us go to the Brooklyn side of the Brooklyn Bridge. And we actually triaged, I mean, droves of people that were coming across the bridge that were covered in, debris and soot and ash and everything, and just triaging all these people with just, most of it was minor injuries, and most of it was inhalation stuff and minor cuts and bruises and things like that. And a few firefighters that were there, a few police officers that were there, and I remember a couple of detectives that we looked at that were just getting evaluated because they were just covered in it. And the one detective had said, told, because he could look at us, me and other paramedics that were there, and a couple of EMTs, and he could see how we were hungry to be in like the thick of it, and like they could almost see in our eyes that we wanted to be where like the action was. We wanted to be where the towers were, And he said to us, right? He said to us, "You don't want to be there." He's like, "There's nothing to see." He's like, "There's just nothing to see. You don't want. You're doing more good here than you would be at Ground Zero right now, and we must have triaged, I don't know how many people that hundred, I'd say hundreds of people, we were triaging inside the MERV, outside of it. And it was, the one thing that I'll tell you that brought some satisfaction to me on that day was that we get all these people that were getting triaged with minor injuries and just minor stuff, and having these requests to go to these, I want to go to this hospital, I want to go to that hospital, like totally self-absorbed and not even aware that there's a major catastrophe going on, or the major incident going on, and that you're going to go where we tell you to go. You're not going to be able to pick and choose what a hospital you want to go to. And normally, in New York City 911, you pretty much got to go where the patient tells you they want to go, if within certain guidelines, but that whole 10-minute rule and stuff, and that pretty much covers everything. But I just I love being able to tell people, no, you're not going where you want to go today. Today is real 911. Today is real emergencies, and you're going to go where we're going to tell you to go. And to me, there was some satisfaction in that, and being able just to tell people that, you know what, this isn't your everyday call 911 for my fever, for my bump and my bruise, and take me where I want to go. Today is a day where me, the EMS provider, me, the EMS professional, is going to tell you where it's most appropriate for you to go to. And that was something that I remember to this day, that it was just a type of thing. It just kind of let people know that this is the real deal. It wasn't playtime anymore, So,
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just smiling because I was thinking, when is it different from any other real city or real, when you're in a state of emergency and somebody calls you and they want their blood pressure checked or, something along that line. And you're just like, I
I know.
remember being, I mean, this isn't connected to 911, but I was like, I was at a 3-alarm fire. I mean, all hell was breaking loose. A couple of people had died, and we were another unit getting ready to go in. And as I'm trying to move through the crowd, this guy grabs me and says, "Can you check out my mom?" And I'm like, "Was she in the fire?" She said, "No, she's watching the fire, and she
Oh,
thinks her
God.
blood pressure's high."
It's funny, the next day after 9/11, I worked the next day, and I remember, them putting out, the mayor and all putting out requests, don't call 911 unless you have a really true emergency. And yet people kept calling, and I remember getting to people's houses and with the most, ridiculous calls, and a lot of them I was responding to with firefighters, first responders, firefighters who didn't want to be on that first responder call. They wanted to be
Right.
down at ground zero
Looking
on the
for
pile looking for their brothers, And you're standing there with them, and you're looking at them, and they're looking at you, and you feel like telling these people, listen, don't you realize the city is smoldering, and you're calling me for this nonsense? I want to just scream at these people, but at the same time, you have to kind of think, well, you know what? This is their emergency at the time. They don't understand, I guess, what you're going through as the EMS provider, as the responder, even the firefighters. I think at that point, a lot of people didn't really understand what they were going through, wanting to be down at ground zero and trying to, find their brothers rather than responding to, the dish breather who was a pneumonia call, that some guy had pneumonia for a week. You know what I mean? And it was I found the days after to be a little frustrating. Even that day too, getting back to even the day I was there. I mean, after the whole triage thing on the Brooklyn Bridge, they sent us down to Manhattan, and they bounced us all over the place, all over the place, trying to find a good spot for us. I remember we were sitting at one location right when Tower 7 fell, and they would tell us on the radio, listen, you guys got to get out of there because Tower 7's going to fall, and then we go to start the MIRV, and it wouldn't start. And you're like, oh, now what? But I tell you, that's the day too where, we're down there, and there was a FDNY tow truck there that came over, gave us a boost, and got it started up again. And part of the thing I think for 9/11 is that you talk about all the heroes and things, people that were there, and a lot of people that were heroes as well and aren't necessarily first responders and firemen and EMS. A lot of people were just people like that FDNY tow truck guy. He's down there in the thick of it, running around, boosting people, getting towing people out of tight spots, and trying to help, first responders and all get to where they need to be. And that guy's doing his job, and he's got a certain level of heroism going on as well, And he
It's
has
interesting
stories.
you were
He
telling.
has stories from that day,
Real, and the story of you on the bridge triaging the people as they were coming across. It reminds me a little bit, and you're recognizing that there were other people involved as well besides just the quote unquote organized first responders. There were a lot of people who did some sort of public service in the city, and anybody, I think, and there were a lot of civilians as well, who just that was their day to step up, but and they did, and they weren't asked to, they wanted to. And but anybody who was doing public service that day, and as you know, I wasn't in the MS during 9/11. I don't, I hope that doesn't hurt anybody's opinion of me, but I was a mounted officer, I was a mounted patrol officer, and we were actually I would got called in to do a shift because there wasn't coverage for it, and I still remember getting up. It was, I think I got a call around 8 o'clock or whatnot, and I was getting out of the shower, and the TV was on, and I hear my wife scream, and I'm like, what's going on, and she said that the plane crashed into the towers, and I'm seeing the initial reports, and I see the smoke, and it's, saying it's a small plane, and I'm saying, well, it's horrible, that's horrible, but, you can't panic in front of the television. I remember yelling at her for panicking in front of the television, not realizing, not having a clue what that day was like. But I ended up spending the entire day at the ready. I mean, we got called back. We had just stepped out. We were just stepping out onto patrol, and the radio toned, and we'd all got 10-2'd back to the base. And I sat and I listened on the Parks radio system, the towers falling. And if you remember the radios that day, they were a cluster. I mean, you couldn't understand anything that was going on because people were picking them up and screaming at them.
Sure.
And when
It's
you're
funny.
sitting there and
Go ahead.
when you're sitting there and you want to respond and you have that, you want to be there, and you have people coming back and saying, no, you don't want to be there. I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, I didn't listen, but you're in service, you're ready to go, you're ready to step up, and there were a lot of people poised, ready, and wanting to step in and help. And they could just watch or listen.
Yeah,
So,
you talk about that the organized or first responders too, and to an extent, a lot of that organization went right out the window. Once they got down to ground zero, once they were operating, I know the B-list crew from my agency that went down there, was dispatched down to ground zero, got split up. And we didn't know where the hell they were. We didn't know if they were trapped, if they were crushed under the towers when they collapsed. We didn't know what was going on. And it turned out they got split up, and one guy ended up down doing morgue duty, just down there counting bodies and
Oh,
trying
shit.
to identify bodies. And this is directed, he was directed to do that by an FDNY lieutenant, whatever. He kind of did what he was told, and his partner got teamed up with somebody else that was down there. I forget what his partner was doing with the ambulance, but I remember we were all worried about them being crushed. And then you're watching the news coverage and seeing the ambulance drive by in the background in the news coverage. So we're like, okay, well, they're okay because there goes the ambulance, but why aren't they coming up on the radio type thing, it's and like I said, it seemed that that organization, a lot of it went out the window, because it was, I think a lot of people wanted to help, and I think at some point you were kind of helpless, and you kind of just did what you felt was going to be best, to
You
limit.
know, I have partners that tell me that they were in the line on West Side, on the West Side Highway, just before Chelsea Piers. There was like a staging area for ambulances by Chelsea Piers, and they were just sitting there and waiting. And everybody was waiting for the bodies. And I remember when I did my medic rotations at St. Finney's, and I remember the docs who were at 9/11 telling us that they were standing outside waiting for the patients to come, waiting for the people to swarm in, and nobody came. And nobody. And I don't. How long were you down there for? I mean, when you were down there first couple of days, right? And
Well, we went down there, the morning of, and we were there until about 12:30 that night. Getting back, like I said, getting bounced around. We eventually they settled us down over, by on the Manhattan side of the Staten Island Ferry, and we were pretty much over there. And anyone that needed anything before the, just kind of people coming in, people going out, kind of switching. That's what they were switching a lot of firefighters out at that point. That was kind of a point of switching people in and out, getting them back to their houses and stuff, and Brooklyn and Staten Island and all. That was like one of the points that they had the ferry dedicated to doing that. And we kind of pretty much just sat there, and same type of thing. There was a lot of ambulances over there as well who were staging. A lot of ambulances just staging there, and not much to do, just kind of just sitting there, But and that's like kind of the end of, not the end of, the end of 9/11. It's not the end of the event, because you had the recovery, you had the rescue, and even the day after I went and helped try to get help with recovery on the pile and stuff like that. And I kind of got the sense that it wasn't my place to be there at that point. I felt like my place to be there trying to do that. So that was, it's the type of thing. It's a long, it was a long day. It's exhausting emotionally, physically, but you know, then you can think back. I think back now, even just talking off the cuff here with you, it's like I think about a lot of little mini stories that are involved in that. You know, and I hope that people listening will maybe call in if you want. We got the toll free number here. You guys can call us, or if you want, you can just put it up in the chat. If you want, you can get and give your little snippet in the chat room. If you're not comfortable calling in, guys. You know, I understand. Feel free to even put a comment after this is over. It'll be up on the blog at emsofficehours.com. Feel free to go ahead and just write your story in the comments of the blog as well. You know, I understand this can be a little bit of an uncomfortable forum for people to call in and kind of tell their story. So if that's the case, and, you know, you can still tell your story. You know, use my blog, use the EMS Office Hours blog as your venue to get your story out there. Okay. You know, and that's what I'm trying to encourage people at least to do with the show tonight. It's not about me, you know, it's not about you, Josh. It's about, I think I'm trying to make this about EMS as a whole. You know, I want to try to, I'm hoping that, you know, we'll get something out of that. I mean, you know, if, like I said, you know, I'm not expecting a lot tonight because, again, I didn't have that much of a time to really get it out there to the masses. But I'm hoping that those that do listen, call in the chat room, whatnot, will at least do some type of participation some way or another on that. You know, Josh, Presbyterian lost two providers, right? You guys lost Keith Fairbairn,
yeah,
and Mario Santoro. Keith
right.
was a medic, Mario was an EMT that day. You know, they're two of, what was it, 42 EMS providers who died on 9/11.
You know, I keep on trying to.
It's very difficult to get a
look up, and it's a hard to get that number 100%. It's really it's really hard, and you know, actually, we have.
I mean, I see a list. I see a list in a bunch of places. It's a short list. It's only about maybe nine providers on there. I don't know if that's because
we also had. Yeah, I see that with the angel on it, and they had like 9 or 11. You know, and Presby has I don't want to say a monument, a memorial at the entrance to the ER bay. And actually, there were four guys, there were two guys who were with Sydney, but they were, and that was Kevin Pfeiffer and James Papa George. And they were also there are four names on that memorial: Keith, Mario, Kevin, and James. And they're the ones that are, you know, really Keith and Mario certainly, you know, on the top, because that was their whole, that was only that was oh man, you're gonna have to forgive me.
That's all right.
All right.
Josh, you know what? I have a caller on the line. Let me bring them in. I don't want to keep them on hold too long here. Hi, who's this?
Hi, it's Paul.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Good. Listen, I don't, you know, I want the gentleman to finish his story. I understand, you know, it's a little difficult, but, you know, let him finish. But my story isn't, you know, anything crazy. At the time, I was a volunteer in Orange County. I'd been a volunteer for quite a long time. I had worked for an oil burner company, Reynolds Plumbing, Heating, and Oil, in Woodbury. And I was working with this guy. I was an oil burner installer, and, you know, I was just a helper at the time. And, you know, we're at this resident's house, and we're doing an install. And, again, like, you know, the gentleman said, you know, I'll never forget that Tuesday morning. It was you know, clear as day. And for me, it was just, you know, another regular work day. I got to work at 7, had my tea, and, you know, talked with the supervisor, trying to figure out what I was going to do and, you know, which install I was going to be on. And the gentleman I worked with was, I don't know how to put this, he was very political and very conspiracy serious. So, you know, he liked to talk a lot and, you know, things of that nature. So when we were on this install and, you know, installing this boiler, and the owner of the house came in and told us, you know, she was like, oh, you know, a plane hit the World Trade Center. And I put my application in for the fire department a couple of months before 9/11. And, you know, I was like, you know, nothing, you know, it's that's a big job, yeah, but, you know, it's not going to be anything crazy, you know, the firemen and EMS, they'll go in and put it out, they'll take care of it. And immediately, as soon as that hit, you know, the guy I was working with, he's like, oh, we're under attack. I was like, no, you're out of your mind, you're crazy. And, you know, I went in and watched a little bit of the coverage and, you know, came back. I was like, all right, man, you know, quit talking your theories and, you know, let's get back to work. You know, and this is 10 years ago. I'm like 19, 20, you know, I was kind of naive. And so, you know, we get back to work and then the homeowner comes in and, you know, the second plane hits. And I was like, wow, you know, that's crazy. And unfortunately at the time, I'm still thinking, you know, okay, you know, I don't even know what I was thinking. I was just like, you know, the guys are going to go up, you know, the men and women are going to put everything out. They're going to take care of everything over there. And, you know, things are going to be back normal. But, you know, when those buildings started to come down, you know, I left work and went down to my volunteer organization.
Nothing went back to normal.
Yeah, no, nothing went back to normal. It hasn't been. Hasn't been since.
So, do you ever want to go into the fire department?
Yeah, I'm there now, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
So,
now you're with Orange County or
yeah,
New York
yeah,
City?
Yeah, I was with Monroe EMS upstate at the time.
So did you guys did you end up going down there, Paul, after the fact with your agency, like the recovery and stuff? I know a lot of places surrounding the city went, you know, ended up going down there. Did you end up going down there?
We were called via the Orange County Mutual Aid System. We ended up sending down two buses. I didn't go myself, not on the 11th. I didn't go with my volleys because they needed somebody to cover the town, and, you know, they wanted somebody with, you know, more experience, and unfortunately I was, you know, one of those ones. I mean, unfortunately for me, because as you said, you know, I wanted to be somewhere doing something, helping somebody, you know?
Right, right.
On the 11th, I ended up staying in Monroe and, you know, hanging around town, and then on the 12th, my ambulance corps had come back, and they had said, you know, we weren't needed. There was plenty of resources. That just my particular agency, and
It's kind of interesting that you said, you know, you wanted to go and help, and they didn't need you. And there was that sort of confusion that was going on. I mean, when I had left my, there was a point when. We were all mobilized and we were ready to go down there, and then there was the last second saying, listen, they don't want to bring horses anywhere down
right,
near
send everybody to
all of that stuff. Well, I wasn't with EMS at the time. They had mentioned this earlier, I was with the Mounted Patrol, but we did traffic control, we did crowd control, we did search and rescue. And but there was a decision, a command decision that said, listen, you know, the horses are real valuable assets and we don't know what the hell's in that dust. And I thought that, you know, I reflect back on that now because I'm in the World Trade Center program, because I ended up getting down there and staying down there for 3.5 months. So, you know, it turns out that, you know, surprise, surprise, that dust wasn't safe. But
yeah.
they thought and they protected the horses on day one. And, you know, for all of us, there's still controversy of whether or not the air was safe to breathe. But, you know, it was not – you could go – I went to a lot of places to, you know – get down there, and I wanted to, you know, like Jim said, you know, you wanted to be part of it. You were a first responder, or you had a public service. You wanted to give, and you wanted to, you know, pull your weight, and there was just no place to do it, and things were so disorganized. I mean, I remember there was a call out at the Javits Center for welders, and I happened to have welded when I was in college, And I went down to the Javits Center and I signed up and I got on the line and they said, everybody was talking and they're saying, well, what do you do? And they said, oh, I do, I can move stuff. I can work a high low. I worked in a warehouse. And somebody turned to me and I said, well, I'm a welder. And they said, yeah, they need welders. And somebody turned around in front of them and said, you got a welder down there? And they said, this guy said he's a welder. And all of a sudden, yeah, and this line went for about a mile. I mean, I don't know if you've been to the Javits Center or seen the Javits, but that's sort of a staging area for was a staging area for volunteers, and the line was around the Javits Center. So it was almost a mile, three-quarters of a mile long. And I literally got pushed to the front of the line waiting, in terms of getting ready to volunteer. And just as I got to the front of the line, a state trooper came out, put a big wooden horse down, said, we have all the volunteers we need, and come back tomorrow.
Sorry.
And, it's just like, yeah. It seemed to be the story of, every time I wanted to volunteer. And then I ignored that. I stayed around, and they opened up the line again. And so I got back online. I filled out my form. They said, okay, you're a welder. Hang out with these guys. There was about a dozen guys that were sitting under a tent. Some had their equipment with them. Some just, had showed up and, were going to work with what was ever there. They brought a hard hat. They brought some gloves. And as soon as we got on, we turned around and hold on a sec.
What do you have, a brain cramp?
Yeah, exactly. The truck pulled up, literally the truck pulled up, and we were getting on the truck to go down to the towers to start cutting steel, and a guy stopped him, he cleared him out, he said, everybody off, we're only taking union guys. Unless you're a union welder, we don't want you.
Yeah.
And so I was turned away again, and I walked straight up from the Javits Center to 63rd Street, and there was the Red Cross. And, filled out my name there. And, long story short, a little girl took pity on me and said, say this woman called you in and just come in later and drop her name. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And they said, do you know New York? And I said, I've been here for 20 years. Do you have a driver's license? And I said, yeah. She said, don't move. We need you. And mm-hmm. That's sort of where I started. My inn was only in the Red Cross, finally.
Yeah, I ended up going down on the 12th to the piers, to Chelsea Piers, and unfortunately, by the time I found my way down, because at that time, I'm this upstate guy who, had no interaction with the city and hadn't been down there ever, so it took me some time to find my way to even Chelsea Piers, and I was with three other people. And we got down over there, and by the time we got there, they were like, all right, we're closing down Chelsea Piers. I was like, ah. So my friends were like, what are we going to do? I was like, file the smoke, and, we're on the West Side Highway, so I just started walking down and tried to jump in with a bunch of people and a bunch of cars. And I had, a couple opportunities to get in, but I would have had to have left my friends behind, and I'm the kind of guy, I'm not leaving anybody behind, I'm staying with everybody together. So, by the time I got in and got down there, they had just let us in, and they said something was going to go and collapse, and by that time it was midnight, 1:30 in the morning, and I was like, all right, time to leave. And I say fortunately now because I had a huge, huge hole in my gut about, I didn't do anything, I didn't help anybody, and I've got a lot of friends and a lot of partners who are very, very sick and not well at all. And, it could be me, and it angers me that, the city isn't doing more, or, even just us. I want to do something to help, people, because there are people who were down there who worked and did more than what I did, and, they need to be thanked and taken care of, and they're just not. And it's a horrible thing, and...
Yeah, Paul, it's funny because, like you said, you might feel like you didn't do as much as you'd wanted to, but I think a lot of people that day did what they could, did what in whatever capacity that they could be in, you know. So I definitely can see your point. I definitely see where you're coming from. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about trying to continue to give. You know, I mean, of course, there's always things and events and projects you can get involved in. But as far as that day itself, I mean, I wouldn't beat myself over it. You know, you try to get involved in whatever capacity you could, you know. And unfortunately, there's some limitation to that as well. You know, at some point, they stopped opening it up to the general public and started closing it down and really, you know, restricting everything. So, yeah, exactly. So. Well, Paul, thanks for your call there. I appreciate it. You know, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it, bro.
All right. Have a good night.
And you too now.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
You know, Paul brings up a good point too, Josh, is, you know, he was on his volley service, and they did call some buses down there, but, you know, he had to stay and cover his area. And people forget that too. You know, a lot of people in EMS and – you know, during that day, that was all going on, but yet the rest of the city still had to be covered. The rest of the city still had to be, you know, taken care of. And I think that, you know, even those providers out there too can even have their end of the story on that. You know, what they did, even if they weren't down at ground zero, you know, they had their own story to tell. They were taking care of your everyday 911 calls, you know, the show must go on type thing. You know, everyone couldn't be down at ground zero. You know, somebody had to take care of this breather over in Queens or down, you know, or somewhere in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? I even know the medic truck from my agency that got sent down to ground zero, got sent down to Manhattan from Brooklyn, ended up doing medical calls in Manhattan because – all the other Manhattan units were already down ground zero. So there was nobody in Manhattan taking care of the people calling 911. They actually had, I think if I remember right, they had to walk like up something like 13 flights of stairs, 14 flights of stairs, something like that, to take care of a very, very bad CHF patient. You know, so they did their job. You know, to me, they're heroes that day as well because, you know, they overcame. They did something that was above and beyond, you know, what was expected as well, you know. So to me, there's so many people you can say are heroes that day, and so many people just did their job and are considered being heroes. You know what I mean?
You talk to the people and they'll say they just did their job. And,
right, exactly.
Then you'll look at them and say, you know, you were outstanding. You did more than your job. You know, you stepped up. You know, because you weren't in, quote unquote, at the pile. You know, I know stories of guys who called in sick. I know stories of guys who called in sick and then went down to the pile and just dug. And, you know,
right.
They used their credentials to get in and dig. And, you know, it's a mixed bag. I have a former partner who's now passed away. She died of cancer. She was never there. She never went down there. And she used to tell me all the time, you know, she recognized how dangerous it was. She had a young kid, and she wasn't going to expose herself to that. And I think it's ironic how she died, ended up dying anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people that went down there, and they're like, I'll be honest, there are people, I went down there. I got down there. You know, I wasn't going to be told no, Jim, and I got down there. And I spent a long time down there, and now I've got, you know, now I've got the souvenir to show for it, and I'm not happy about it. It's not something, you know, I consider it almost stupid, and I don't know how I will reconcile that. As many first responders, you know,
sure.
they're going to say, you know, oh, well, I did what I needed to do, and but there's always second guessing. Did I really need to be there? You know, it was recovery,
but,
you know, and
Josh, I just want to – there's a couple of things I want to mention during the show tonight just to kind of bring people's awareness to it. You know, they out of 343 FDNY members that died, two of them are included are paramedics that also died, which is Carlos Lilo and Ricardo Quinn, FDNY EMS medics. And actually Sunday, the 11th, tomorrow – there's going to be a wreath laying at the Carlos Lilo Memorial Park. It's going to be at 6 p.m. So I just want to remind people, if you're anywhere, it's going to be at at the Memorial Park. It's in Astoria, Queens. So if you're going to be anywhere near there and can go head over to the park and watch that wreath laying, head on over there. Again, it's 6 p.m., and they actually change the time because of all the events and extra events because it's a 10-year, you know, marking of the event. So they moved it to 6 p.m. to try to get as many people there as possible. So if you're going to be anywhere near that location, head over to the park and take part in that wreath laying. The park's at 21st Avenue and 75th Street in Astoria, Queens. So head on over there if you can tomorrow. And not everyone can get to Manhattan. You know, not everybody can get to some more of the bigger places that stuff's going on. So that's one place people can go to. And you know, if you live in Queens, you can go ahead over there and you know, still take part in the ceremonies and your respects for the people that were lost on 9/11. So just want to go ahead and put that in there. A couple of things too before we end tonight, but that's one of the things I want to point out to people. One other thing too, I don't know if you've seen this either, Judge, but also tomorrow as well, the LaGuardia Community College's cafeteria, it's going to be open for EMS personnel. And it's a way that they want to try to sort of like this show tonight, you know, trying to get some kind of a collective reflection on the events of 9/11 is what they're trying to do at the cafeteria here as well tomorrow. And they want to, you know, have that reflection on the events of 9/11. They want to honor those that were lost as well. So it's going to be between 10, that's going to be open between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. It's going to be at the LaGuardia C building. And that's over on 29-10 Thompson Avenue in Long Island City. It's on the third floor. So, again, something else you can go take part in, you know, without having to be in Manhattan, you know, especially since, like we mentioned earlier on about, you know, a lot of first responders not being invited, not having room to be at the Ground Zero ceremony. So, you know, if you're Long Island City, close to that, you know, go take part in that as well. It's another good thing you can go and take part in, you know, also be part of the honoring of those that were lost and reflect on 9/11. So just one of the things that
Presbyterian is also doing a service for 9/11 and first responders. I believe it starts at 8 at the at Hospital 14 at,
okay.
at Cornell. So
if anyone's listening,
sure.
If your agency is doing something or if you know of an event, try to post it either in the chat room if you're in the chat, even call in real quick, let us know where it's going to be, and I'll try to get it up on the show notes so anyone listening to this, you know, maybe tomorrow morning or whatever, can see what's going on. And it may not be too late to get that information out there and give people an opportunity. Again, guys, if you're listening in live, you want to call in, give your comments, your thoughts, tell your story, please feel free. It's 877-217-3924. And again, I understand if you're not comfortable doing that. If that's the case, just listen in as you're doing. And you can always, of course, go over to the blog in the show notes and post, you know, write your story in the blog comments. You know, it's nothing to be uncomfortable about. Again, this is EMS providers with telling stories, you know, sharing our thoughts just as we would if we were in the front of the ambulance or sitting in our garage, you know, talking about stuff. So please feel comfortable in doing that.
You know, Jim, I got to tell you, if there's, you know, if people listening to the show and maybe watching TV tomorrow, watching TV tonight, just recognize that there is a recognized form of critical stress that, you know, it's almost job stress, and you can bring on PTSD by just watching too much of this stuff. And especially if you have strong memories of 9/11, it get outside. You know, take a walk. Be reflective some other way. Don't glue yourself to the TV. My God, you know, life is for the living. And if you have, you know, as a memorial, as a way of respecting the people who didn't make it to this day, get out and enjoy the day a little bit, or at least just be reflective away from media.
Right.
Because they're going to hype this stuff to the point that your ears are going to bleed. And, you know, that's one thing I'll tell people.
Yeah. You know, Josh, another thing is, too, I got an email from Scott Shields. He's on one of my members, one of my lists. He's going to try to call in, but I guess he wasn't able to make it. But he did say, you know, he was a gentleman, and he had a search and rescue dog called Bear. And Bear was one of the first search and rescue dogs on 9/11, and he actually went out recovering more victims than any other dog there. And he actually, 1 year later, died from multiple cancers from all the stuff that he inhaled and was exposed to on 9/11. So, you know, I wanted to mention that because it's actually a very touching story how Bear actually was the dog that found the chief of FDNY, found some other, you know, high-level people that they were digging for. They couldn't find them. And, you know, because if you watch the story, I'll put a link to the video in the show notes, but they talk about how in the aftermath, you know, when everything was collapsed and everything was smoldering, and the responders, they didn't know where to begin to look for people. They didn't have the tools to look for people. And how this guy showed up, Scott Shields showed up with his dog, Bear, and pretty much just started going through the pile, and Bear was kind of pointing out where there were people, alive or dead, you know, but pointing out where people were and giving the responders and the rescuers a place to start digging. You know, I had a very moving video on YouTube. It was actually part of a bigger show that was on Animal Planet. A very, very moving video. It's like 8 minutes long. I'll put the link to it. It's amazing how during our 9/11 too, and during the search and the rescue, there was actually 350 search and rescue dogs they used to find victims on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And the dogs from all over the country, all over the world that came to do this. To me, it's very, very, I think a very moving thing, you know, to have that dedication and what they did, because talk about unsung heroes, right? These are animals that, you know, you never hear about otherwise. And, you know, without them, how many victims would have been found, you know, much, much later? Maybe some of the victims that were found alive wouldn't have been found alive if it wasn't for some of these dogs. So I encourage people to go check out that video. It's on YouTube. The YouTube channel is Bear's Dad 2, so you can go check out a bunch of series of videos. But the one I'm talking about, I'll put the exact link to that in the show notes so people can watch this actual video about Bear. He actually had an FDNY funeral when he did die a year later because they recognized how much he did. You know,
his service, right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty amazing, pretty great story. And it's actually a backstory about Scott and somebody trying to smear his name and all kinds of crap like that, too, which is pretty horrendous. But something that Paul was talking about, you know, conspiracy theory and all that crap. The main show on Animal Planet was about the search and rescue dogs. So pretty cool stuff. You know, I encourage people to go check that out. So again, I'll put that link below in the show notes also. So just some interesting stuff. You know, I wish more people would call in. I see a lot of people in the chat room. You know, again, I know it's uncomfortable calling in with this type of stuff, so I can't really blame you. Probably last year, I probably wouldn't have been able to do a show like this. I think every year I get a little more control of myself during this time of year. I mean, honestly, I get very emotional. You can, you know, it's very difficult for me to talk about this stuff. So, you know, I'm glad I was able to at least get it out this year, and maybe people will go at least comment in the blog and share some thoughts and some, you know, some of their stories.
I'd love to hear a comment on the thing that takes you back there. I mean, you know, what is when you go out, you know, and you know that. For some people, it's the clear blue sky. For other people, it's the sound of sirens. You know, there are certain stimuluses that just bring you back to that moment, that day. And I'm just wondering if you have any of that, Jim, if you have anything that one thing that stands out that really just brings you smack back to, you know, your feelings for that day.
Nothing really brings – I can't say anything in particular will spiral me back into it. A lot of times the thing that might do that for me is if I see somebody that I haven't seen in a while that was there with me that day, it might bring back some, you know, some memories of that. You know what I mean? But on my day-to-day, activities, I can't really say there's anything as far as sirens and things like that. I mean, actually, where I live now, upstate New York, we had a lot of damage from the hurricane that we just had, and that actually brought back some memories because the devastation and destruction that was done up here in upstate New York is, I mean, it's nowhere near, you know, the ground zero.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, that just the atmosphere of the destruction, the quietness, the stillness that is over these towns up here from this devastation, and on top of that, the coming together of the community and the coming together of everybody wanting to help and do something brings back a lot of memories, you know, from 9/11. And something that Paul had mentioned earlier too, you know, it's just like you want to get there, you want to help, and it's the same thing now. Of course, like again, a much much smaller scale. Because what was ground zero? Something like 16 acres or something like that of debris and destruction after the towers fell. You know, so you're talking about a much smaller scale. But still, the coming together of communities, of responders, of agencies, it just amazes me. You know, the human spirit, I guess you would say, you know, of coming together and helping each other and putting aside differences and not worrying about money or anything else and just trying to help your fellow, you know, you help your neighbor, you know, and
yep.
save lives and save property. And just that's, I guess, at least this year, I guess maybe brought it home a little bit more, you know, seeing the damage and the devastation, you know, the towns where I'm living now. So that's the only thing I could think of. But as far as anything in particular, I can't really say.
Yeah, I got to, you know, that was I can't hold a candle to that, the last statement that you had about, you know, the sense of, you know, your neighbors pulling together and that thing that, in my eyes, and it makes me a little bit nationalistic, but it makes what I see as America's great, you know, greatness is when we, you know, we just cross all our differences. You could have been arguing with your neighbor about where he places the trash the next day, but you're helping him dig out, you know, at the end of the disaster. And that's really what makes us great. That's what makes us great as a nation and makes me proud to be an American.
Yeah.
You know, I feel sort of trivial, you know. I mean, because in New York City, when there's a big high-rise building fire, the smell of a building fire is different when it's a high-rise concrete building than when it's a regular structural, you know, wood building or like a brownstone type, you know, wooden frame construction. And that smell, you know, it's like a couple of, I don't remember, when did it happen? What, 2005, 2006, when the Yankees plane crashed on the east side? And I tell you, you could smell that smell all the way across, and it was just like right again 9/11, and it was just completely eerie. And sirens really don't do it, you know, because the one thing that I do remember is how quiet the city was the first few nights after the towers fell. It was eerily quiet. There wasn't a sound. There wasn't traffic. There wasn't anything going on. Even emergency vehicles, they'd ride down the streets. They wouldn't be playing. They wouldn't be using their sirens. They didn't need to. They didn't need to move anybody out of the way. They just have their lights on and just go. And it was just weirdness. That same sort of, you know, deathly quiet that happens after a new snowfall.
Yeah.
Sort of descends
the same,
on the city.
And that's the and same that, thing. No. Yeah, that's the same thing up like now where I am too. Like after the hurricane and when it was all over, it's that same type of quiet going on. And again, that kind of brought me back a little bit, you know, to 9/11, that sort of, I guess, non-stimulus, you know, of not hearing anything, you know, it's just that eerie quietness of it, you know. And, you know, we talk about, you know, coming together too. You know, a friend of mine, Stephen Canarian, has an event he's trying to get together on Facebook, and he actually has quite a amount of number of people that joined this event, and it's about flying the flag, your American flag, overnight, tomorrow night, in honor of those that were lost and those that responded to rescue friends and coworkers on 9/11. And he mentions in the event that the sight of the American flag was very moving during that time. And you think about how many people were flying the American flag after 9/11. You saw it on everywhere you turned. And that's kind of faded, I think, over the years. And it's kind of sad that people don't have that, you know, that zeal, I guess, to fly that they used to. But at least, you know, this event is something I think, you know, a pretty cool thing. Pretty cool thing Hilo started there about displaying the flag overnight, just, you know, for everyone to go ahead and just fly their flag overnight on 9/11. He had it from tomorrow night up until noon on Monday, at least until noon Monday. So
that's pretty cool. That's cool idea.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty nice idea he came up with to do that. And he's got about 4,000 people on Facebook that joined his little event there that are agreeing to do it. And that's just, you know, people that click the agree button, you know, they're going to attend type thing, you know. So pretty cool idea. So if you're listening, you know, you can do that. Go ahead and do it. You know, maybe there'll be enough people doing it. It'll be a pretty cool sight to see. So you know, if you're out there listening, go ahead and do it. You know, show that honor those that were lost and responded.
Right.
9/11.
Right.
You know,
their memory lives on.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, actually, you talk about stories. He asked you to put a book together on stories about 9/11, his experiences on 9/11. He's got that coming out in a few weeks as well. So keep an eye out for that. Steve Canarian, he's going to have it on Amazon and all that good stuff. It'll be digital. It'll be in print. So great stories you have. I actually got to take a peek of that book when I saw him at the EMS Expo and got to read a chapter or two. He's got some pretty good stuff in there, some pretty decent stories about 9/11.
Are those stories he collected or his stories?
No, his stories from 9/11, his experiences, what he saw, the people he knew, how he walked away from it without, you know, having a lot of health issues and things like that. And he also talks about the first attack as well on a Trade Center in the book, sort of like a little surprise he's got in there. Talks about the first attack on the Trade Center as well, you know, and the lessons that he learned from that attack even. So pretty interesting stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a pretty good book and pretty good highlight of the EMS end of 9/11, which is, you know, hopefully that's what we're doing tonight, Josh. I'm hoping that we're giving a little bit of a highlight, you know, of the EMS end of 9/11, you know. Again,
yeah.
Anyone listening, if you're listening live tonight, you know, we're just about out of time, so I guess it's hard to call in now and give a full account, a full story, but please feel free to put some comments in the blog post. You know, go ahead and jot down what your experiences were, what your thoughts were. You know, we put them up on in print, get them up on the blog, you know, associate it with this podcast. And down the road, you know, maybe years from now, you know, they'll be coming up. The internet is forever, you know, and it'll come up on searches down the road and generations to come, and they'll see your story. So go ahead and feel free to write as much as you want about your experiences.
And I want to say something else here, Jim, is that, you know, keep in mind, you know, if the miracle of the internet, we're talking, you know, I'm hoping that there are guests and there are people listening from all over the country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Jim and I are pretty much New York centric. I mean, our experience you sort of, unless you were on the federal level, and Lord, I'd love to hear from somebody who covered both incidences, but you were pretty much one or the other. Even when I was with the Red Cross, you were one or the other. And, if you responded to Shanksville, to the airline crash, or you were responded to the Pentagon, I mean, that is a part that we all need to communicate. I mean, like you and I can communicate our aspect, our feelings and our memories of the World Trade Center. And certainly that was, a major part. But, keep in mind, there was Pennsylvania and D.C. In that too. So,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Those are people that have valid experiences and were part of it.
Yep.
I think a lot of times it centers around the towers, or at least it seems to me that it centers around the towers. And it wasn't. It was the whole country. I mean,
I deal with
some business people.
That's a great point, Josh, too, because it is a good point, because, while the event was on the towers and a bulk of the people were New York City, people from all over the country came to help, all over the nation came to help, and people were affected, from all over. And I think it's important to just kind of point out, and again, while this session, this episode, I'm trying to focus on the EMS end of it and the EMS story end of it, but everybody has a story, and I think every story is equally important, and I think every story needs to be told, about this thing, so that it doesn't get lost, that you can't, that doesn't get forgotten. You see all the time, never forget, but we have to tell these stories so that we don't forget. We can't just bury it and say, well, we can't tell the story because it hurts too much, and unfortunately, sometimes that pain is maybe part of the story and part of getting it out, But I think everybody has a story to tell, and I think every story is equally important. And even tonight, we talked a little bit, Paul had his little story, and the story about the rescue dogs, and my little story. And it's everyone has a different angle. Everybody had a different role to play. We just can't. Mm-hmm. Forget that stuff. Now, Josh, 10 years ago, in 9/11, 2001, now the numbers that I have here, they might not be accurate. This is what I've got from a few different sources, got these numbers, but 2,819 civilians that were lost, 343 FDNY people, 23 NYPD, and 37 Port Authority officers. So I think it's important, and again, the story that revolve around all those people that were lost and the people that were injured. You talk about the stats of like something about 65 FDNY EMS people that were injured, 51 volunteer EMS and private EMS providers that were injured. So they have stories as well. So,
and that list is still growing. That list is still growing. Let's not forget that,
Right. Got people that are coming up with stuff, down the road that, need to be addressed, and their stories have to be told. And I think that from years to come, hopefully the stories will keep coming out, and that there'll be more and more maybe venues like this that'll try to give people an opportunity to tell it, or even people start their own blogs, start their own way of telling their stories. The possibilities are out there, so I hope people take advantage of it. Josh, I'm going to try to
keep in mind also.
Good.
Well, I was going to say, remember, there's a project at the World Trade Center, and I hear that the museum now is the memorial is quite something. But there's a project there that's everybody's stories. They're literally collecting every verbal. Story that is that they can. So I mean, even if you end up never doing it here or on the blog, if you make it down there, it's something that oral history needs to be recorded.
Yeah, Absolutely. And I know that the New York City REMAC website has a downloadable PDF document on helping people too. So if you have issues, you're still struggling with 9/11, which a lot of providers still are, and it's not just EMS providers, also FDNY and NYPD and everyone that was there on the pile and that was there during the attacks. A lot of people are still struggling with what they experienced. REMAC has the downloadable PDF that you can download and gives you resources and things you can do to try to help you cope. And a lot of people don't know about that resource that's there. So I hope that they'll seek that out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, of course. But it's a good resource, I think, for people to reach out if they're still having difficulties. They find that every year, that they're having more and more difficult time, dealing with it. So I just want to kind of mention that. And again, I put that in the show notes. So, Josh, any final thoughts? I'm going to try to end it here. So anything else you want to add before I cut it out for the night?
No, I'm privileged that you called me to do the show with you, Jim, and my heart is out there for everybody, all the EMS families and all the first responder families that are remembering this day on a sadder note.
All right, Josh. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining me as usual. Again, anything you think of, don't forget you can put it over in the blog as well, or send me an email. I'll add it to the show notes also. All
right. Thanks, Jim.
All right. Have a great night.
Good night.
Well, guys, that's pretty much all we have tonight. I'm going to end it there. Thank you so much if you listen live. Again, if you didn't call in with your story, I understand. This is the type of thing it's hard for people to talk about still. It's hard to people to even relive and reminisce about. But please feel free to put your story in the notes on the blog. It's emsofficehours.com. I'll have this podcast up there probably by later on tonight or tomorrow morning. Feel free to put your story in and give your thoughts on 9/11, what you experienced, and what maybe your takeaway was for that day as well. So thanks for joining me on this special EMS Office Hours. I do want to just end with a little excerpt from a lecture from William J. Bennett that he gave to the U.S. Naval Academy in 1997. And he comments on how honor never grows old and honor rejoices the heart of age. It does so because honor is, finally, about defending those noble and worthy things that deserve defending, even if it comes at a high cost. In our time, that may mean social disapproval, public scorn, hardship, persecution, or, as always, even death itself. Good night.